The Working Cows Podcast, Episode 2.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
This episode of the Working Cows Podcast is brought to you by Kamak Ranch Supply. Check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. On this episode of the Working Cows Podcast, we're discussing the four pillars of a profitable ranching operation. Dallas Mount is our guest today. Dallas Mount is a University of Wyoming Extension educator. Dallas has served the southeast area of Wyoming as a livestock systems extension educator with the University of Wyoming since 2001. Dallas's background includes ranch work in the cow-calf, yearling, feedlot, and hay production segments. His passions include teaching profit and resource-focused ranch management workshops, where he constantly learns from innovative ranchers. Dallas co-developed the High Plains Ranch Practicum School, an 8-day systems-based ranch management school focused on economics, range and forage, production, and people. Dallas and his family operate a management-intensive grazing operation near Wheatland, Wyoming. Dallas, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast. I'm looking forward to taking an opportunity to sit down with you and to pick your brain a little bit about some of these practices and some of these sectors in the agriculture operations that can help maximize people's effectiveness and profitability. So thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here. I'm really excited about the podcast you're putting together, and I love the idea. So thanks for having me as a guest.
Yeah, I'd like to start out just kind of hearing a little bit about your background, what brought you into the ranching industry, what brought you into the University of Wyoming Extension program, and some of the things you're doing with Ranching for Profit and High Plains Ranch Practicum.
Sure, Clay. Yeah. I did not grow up in agriculture. I grew up in cities primarily, but got interested in ag about late high school. And I think in some ways that's an advantage because you're not raised ingrained with the this is how we always do it ideas. I did a bachelor's and master's at Colorado State and was left school extremely dangerous because I thought I was smart. I hit the ground and started working for some ranchers in Colorado, both in the plains and in the mountains. I spent a year in a feedlot, and then I got a job in extension, and that's really when I started being exposed to some people that were outstanding ranchers and doing things in a different way. Harlan Hughes was one of my mentors, helped me understand looking at the economic side of the ranch. And then some other folks that have influenced me have been Aaron Berger with Extension in Nebraska, Dave Pratt with Ranching for Profit, Alan Crockett with Ranching for Profit, Burke Tigert, like reading some of his writings, and then the countless ranchers that I've had the opportunity to work with and have been brave enough and to open their ranches, their homes, their books to me and let me work with them and learn from them as well. So what my ideas are that ranching can be profitable, that it must be profitable, it's going to be sustainable, and that, really, in order to achieve those things, you're going to have to do things differently, and you can't ranch the way the neighbor does or that the family has always done. The only thing that's constant is change, so you better be looking for different ways to do things and challenging the status quo if you want to stay in business for very long.
Do you think that the necessity of change has been a development over time? Has that been something that we have to start doing things differently because of changes in the market, changes in the global economy? Has that been, or has that at least accentuated the need for change in your mind?
You know, I guess I've only been paying attention probably 15 years, really. So my time frame is pretty narrow on this. But I think it's always been here. Maybe just the rate of change is getting faster. At least that's the way it feels to me. I think it's always been around. It's just maybe I'm finally becoming aware of it in a significant way.
So what developed that desire to spend your life both, I think, as a producer and investing in producers?
Sure. I guess I really enjoy ranching. I do it myself. We've got a grass place here in Wheatland that right now, the last few years, we've been custom grazing cows on. So I'm really passionate about the business, about the ecology of things. I love the fact that ranching is so stinking complicated and that there's so many moving parts to it. It's really intellectually interesting, because you have to be an ecologist. You have to be an economist. You have to understand animal biology somewhat and be able to put all these things together and make decisions in a systems framework. So for one thing, it's really exciting, and I love working with animals. I love being outside. And then I really like the ranching culture and interacting with people that are involved in ranching. I mean, the people, I think, are some of the best folks in the world. So that's I guess, what's drawn me to it.
Yeah, I was talking to my dad the other day, and he said that Mike Rowe and his new kind of endeavor has been talking about how the people who work outside and work with their hands and are, doing the dirty jobs, so to speak, are often the most happy people, or have always been the most happy people that he has met. And certainly has rung true in my life, and has been. I spent some time in the city enough to know that I love the lifestyle that I grew up with as a ranch kid, and enough to know that I want to spend the rest of my life investing in making a profitable operation. So,
cool. Yeah, I feel the same way.
So I think that's a good segue into. What I want to talk about today is kind of a systems approach to our examination of our own operations and kind of how we go about examining the different sectors or the different systems within our operation. What are those different sectors, I guess, is a place where we should start, and then maybe we can dive in and look a little bit more into what each one of those sectors, how we can maximize the effectiveness of each of those sectors.
Sure. Would you like me to go through them, or did you want to do that?
I will defer to you.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. So, in my introduction, I probably didn't do a very good job saying what I do. I teach both the Ranch Practicum School, which is something Aaron and I have developed with our roles with University Extension Service. The Ranch Practicum School is an 8-day course that takes ranchers over about a 5-month period through the different facets of ranch management. I also get to teach the Ranching for Profit School, which is an outstanding business school for ranchers. Both of these, we divide up the main segments of looking at your ranch business into four key pillars. So the land or the ecology is being one of those. The production enterprises, so whether it's cows, sheep, goats, hay, farming, whatever those production enterprises are, that's a part we need to focus on. And probably that's the part that ranchers are pretty good at focusing on already. I mean, people, cowmen love talking about cows, right? The next part would be the money, the economics, the finance, looking at how does the cash flow, can I pay my bills, how are my enterprises in terms of profitability, where am I making money, where is value being drawn out of the business? And then the last one is the people side of the business. And, how am I doing at managing the people that work with me? What about managing that difficult family business interaction? And how do we go about those things? So those are the four pillars that we talk about in each one of those schools.
What do you think, which one of those pillars typically presents the greatest roadblock to success in your mind?
Without a doubt, it's the people. The people is the most challenging part to work through. We all have our skills in certain areas in ranching. We generally don't get into ranching because we like working with people. I'll put it that way. So oftentimes for those folks in the business, that's one of the things that we struggle with the most.
Okay, so the people is the, and in the interest of full disclosure, I have been a student of Dallas's through the High Plains Ranch practicum, and it has been a very eye-opening experience. I love every minute of both the class and the outdoor times. Just been something that has been really invigorating to me as someone who enjoys looking at things from a different perspective and opening my eyes to different ways of thinking and thinking about these four pillars. So, yeah, those people relationships can tend to be a roadblock to success that I think that we need to maybe spend a little bit of time looking into how can we successfully navigate those relationships. So what are some best practices that you have come across and that you encourage in your teaching capacities for people looking to succeed in the people management side of the ranching industry?
Oh, yeah, sure. So as you were talking, I was thinking about Jolene Brown, and I've heard her speak a few times, and she works with farm families in the Midwest and has a lot of good information that applies to any small business and managing these people relationships. And she talks about being a family-first family or a business-first family. And the idea of if we're a family and we're in business together, what comes first? Is it are we a family first and then we also run a business, or are we in business together and then we also are a family? And when I first heard that, I thought, well, we're family first, right? Family's the most important, and we have to put family first in all the things we do. And what she says, and it kind of challenged me at first, but the more I think about it and the interactions I've had with folks, I really find it to be true, is we have to get the business relationships right so that we can be a family. And so she says, be a business first family. So we put the business and we deal with those things so that then once we have those things right and they're structured well, now we can be a family. And I really appreciate the way that she puts that and the challenges that she gives on that. And I think there's a lot to be said for making sure things are done well on the business side of things, that communication is happening, that people understand their roles, that they're being held accountable to fulfill those roles, to do the things that they say they're going to do, just like if they were an employee in any other business. And then once those things are handled well, now we can be a family, and we can enjoy those kind of relationships. Otherwise, it just really gets in the way of the family relationships, which are so important to us. I had lunch yesterday with a rancher who's gone into business with his son. And it's a ranching business, and he's really financed the whole ranching operation. He's purchased the equipment, he's purchased the cows, and son is making all the decisions and calling all the shots. And I mean, that's pretty great to have that kind of autonomy. But dad, whose dollars are being are used here and are being put at risk, has zero communication from son about this is our strategy, this is, what we're doing, this is our business plan. And dad's asked for this several times, and son won't produce it. And dad's like, I think I'm done with it. I think I'm tired of my money being used foolishly, and I'm going to have to cut him off here. And so we were having a conversation at lunch yesterday with how does he back out of this and preserve the relationship. And it's going to be really difficult. And looking back on it, the expectation should have been better laid from the beginning that, hey, if I'm going to put – and we're talking about $750,000 here. If I'm going to put $750,000 of my retirement nest egg towards your ranching habits, this is what I'm going to expect of you. I'm going to expect quarterly earnings reports. I'm going to expect some risk analysis, some projections on, hey, if things go well, this is how this business might perform. If things go poorly, this is what we might lose, and make sure that deal was made up front. And then I think everybody would have felt better about moving forward. And then if we were at this stage and those things weren't being done, I think son would probably feel, gosh, I agreed to do those things. I haven't done them. Any reasonable boss would fire me or take their equity out of the deal. Now at the stage that we're at, I'm afraid the relationship's going to be damaged as it moves forward.
Sure. And that's exactly what we're trying to to help prevent here at the Working Cows podcast, and I know that's what you're doing with Ranching for Profit and the High Plains Ranch Practicum, to get those people in a room and make them aware of some of the pitfalls that they are facing as producers and some of the things that they can do to avoid those pitfalls. And it's that kind of out-of-the-box thinking of let's be a business-first family so that when we are together as a family, we're not thinking about how my brother really screwed us with his decision the other day, that we had everybody in a room and we made that decision together as a business, and now when we're together as a family, there's none of this complication, and we can be a family. Am I understanding your perspective?
Exactly. You got it. So, you know, I think one of the tools we talk about in Ranching for Profit is using the org chart, and we introduced you guys to that the other day. It comes out of the book called The E-Myth. So, you know, having people have specific roles in the business and have responsibilities for those and make that organization structure in your ranch business clear so that you know who's in charge, who's the CEO, and what is a reasonable what is a well-functioning, competent CEO. What kind of things are they going to do? And what about the person that's in charge of putting together the cash flow? Who is that? When do we expect to see the cash flow? What kind of things will be in the cash flow? And making sure those things are clear and that, so that folks can be held accountable to making sure they get them done.
Yeah, you've got to have somebody who's responsible for whatever it is that's getting done. And you can look at them and say, this got done. You did it. Good job. Or this didn't get done. What can we do to improve next time? And it's got to be somebody that you can get.
You know, one of the things as we talk about that, oftentimes we think, oh my gosh, we're going to ask somebody to do something else in the business. And really, as you think about yourself and what motivates you, at least what motivates me is being handed responsibility for tasks that I see as important in the business. So we might think about it as, oh gosh, I don't want to burden Clay with this important job, but maybe he's back there thinking, man, I'd really like to be responsible for making sure that gets done. And, you know, sometimes giving people responsibility for things is an honor rather than a burden.
Yep, and it's a motivating factor that you know that people are going to look to you and say, they're going to review how you did, and you get to give it your all and try and do your best to make it a successful endeavor, and that's important.
That's right.
So I think that's very helpful, something that we've taken the opportunity to whet some appetites more, get people into looking into the people side of their operation, and I appreciate that. Before we dive into the other three pillars, the land, the production, and the economics, I'd like to take a minute to thank our sponsors. This episode of the Working Cows podcast is brought to you by Kamak Ranch Supply. Check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. They understand the needs of ranchers and farmers, whether you need to take care of your livestock, horses, or even building supplies. They have everything you need to work your cows, whether that be the chute you work them through, the water you bring them to, or the tools you use to make them go up that chute a little bit faster. So check out KamakRanchSupply.com for all of your ranching needs. All right, we're back here with Dallas Mount of University of Wyoming Extension and a few other hats that he wears that we've been talking about today, but mostly focusing on the four pillars of a successful ranching industry or ranching operation. We've talked about the people side of it. I guess maybe we should go in the next in the order of next biggest roadblock that you typically find people experiencing trouble being successful in this pillar.
Economics and finance would be the next one.
All right. So what can we do in the economics and finance area to maximize our return on our investment of our time?
Get off your horse and get off your tractor and get in the office and do some work. How about that?
That's good. Plain and simple, just like we want it. Yep.
You know, and I think part of it's learning how to do it. Oftentimes when we were raised in agriculture, Dad taught us how to build a fence and how to pull a calf, but he didn't teach us how to do a cash flow and how to run economic projections on the enterprises in our businesses. And that sounds really intimidating and complicated, but it's not. I mean, it's just a bunch of little steps and figuring out how to do them. And then it's going to put you in control of your business and where your business is going to lead you. So we separate these two out, economics and finance. Let's start with economics. Economics is asking the question of, is my business profitable? And how can I make it more profitable? So when we look at a ranch business, we split that business into its enterprises. So your cow-calf operation is going to be an enterprise. And that would essentially be all the cows taking that calf to weaning. Once that calf is weaned, if you retain it, then you're essentially moving into a stocker enterprise or a backgrounding enterprise. So we separate your ranch business into its various enterprises. And we do an economic analysis on those, which essentially just, where am I creating value and what are the costs of creating that value? And then we see which are working and which are not. And for most ranch businesses, there's something going on inside that business that is economically losing money. And if we can identify what that thing is, and then if you don't like doing it, you stop doing it, you'll make more. It's a crazy thought, right? How can I can stop doing something, I can work less, and I can make more? And that's what we're saying in the economics part of that is, let's figure out what's not working, let's stop doing it, and then let's figure out what is working, can we make it better, and then let's do more of it.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing, is we find what is working, and then we scale it up if we can, and we make it a more profitable industry. And I think a lot of that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think a lot of that is going to be tied to your region. What is profitable in one area is going to be different than what's profitable in another area because of the region that you find yourself in.
There's going to be regional advantages for sure in some things, but I think there'd be less regional effect than what we might think. What I find is generally the thing that's profitable are the thing that person's most passionate about and is good at. Oftentimes you see ranchers that put up hay because they feel like they need to or they have to, and they hate putting up hay. Well, generally when you go in and evaluate those businesses, the hay business really stinks because they've treated it as a stepchild, right? You know, we don't really care about it, we don't like doing it, but we really like our cows and we're passionate about our cows and we really want to do a good job with them. Well, oftentimes the cows are working. Now, that's not always the case, but sometimes that's what we find. So yeah.
Sure. Definitely the thing that I noticed as we went through this in the class was that these are all numbers. Almost all of these are numbers that you already know in your industry, in your business or in your production, your ranching business. You already know these numbers a lot of times. It's just you haven't been putting them into any kind of a format that you can gain any knowledge from what you know or gain any benefit
right.
from what you already know.
Right. Yeah, oftentimes the most difficult number to come to when we do a cow-calf analysis is, how many cows do you have? And surprisingly, that can be a difficult one to come to. Or how many did you expose to breeding? You know, those kind of things. But yeah, these numbers aren't really all that difficult to come up with. It's like you said, it's just a matter of structuring them right and putting them in the right spots that we can get usable information from.
Sure. Yeah, that cow number, how many cows do I have? Well, it depends on when you count. And that's really, I think, probably what you're talking about with the difficulty in determining that number is because you got to figure out when you start counting.
Exactly. So that's economics. Finance is really related to cash flow and use of leverage, use of debt, those kind of things. So, you know, how does the ranch cash flow? Do I have enough money to meet my obligations? And those kind of things. And really, those are difficult. Are different decisions in the economic decisions. We can have a plan that economically makes a lot of sense, but if it takes $100,000 in startup money to do it and you don't have $100,000 or the ability to get that, you can be in a financial bind. Just like we can look at ranches that financially work but economically are losing money. So if you happen to be landing on a ranch that all the land is paid for and all the cows are paid for, you can operate that ranch at an economic loss but cash flow through it. Okay, so we're getting a little deep into the weeds here, and that's probably as deep as I want to go on that. But we do spend time looking at the finances of the business as well as the economics.
Sure. So we've talked about a couple of typical roadblocks for the typical ranching industry or ranching operation. What do you think are some of the greatest areas where there's opportunity to really get the best return on our investment of our time and our resources?
That'd probably be take us to that next pillar, which is the land. And I think as ranchers start looking at their businesses from an economic perspective and stepping back and looking at the whole picture, we see that really if we're in the ranching business, we're largely in the business of land management and growing grass. And so when you ask the question of where can we get the greatest return for our dollar spent and our time spent, I oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes it comes into becoming better grazers. So if we can get better at growing grass and better at harvesting that grass with an animal that's producing a positive economic return, we can have an enormous impact on our bottom line as well as the whole capacity of our place. So I think of a ranch that, you know, their cows are making a margin of maybe $400 a head, but yet what's really holding them back is capacity, and they just don't have enough head to support the people that are on that ranch. So oftentimes if we start looking at the forage base on that place, we can find, well, hey, if we develop some water here, if we got our grazing a little better here so that we weren't overgrazing these pastures every year, we were giving them more time to recover, and then we split some pastures so we got better animal distribution, they were getting to that back corner that they never went to before. Now I can start adding cattle and adding animals that have a positive margin on them, and increasing the capacity of that ranch while maintaining and improving land health at the same time. I can have an enormous impact on the bottom line of that ranch.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that has really opened my eyes is just the idea that when a cow comes into a pasture, if she has free choice to graze the whole pasture all at once, she's going to go through and pick out the best stuff first. And then she might move on to less desirable forage, but she'll probably go back and graze that best stuff a second time after it's had some time to regrow. Is that a pretty good understanding of how that typically works?
That is, yeah. And that's, you know, people talk about overgrazing a lot, and what you just described is overgrazing happening in what can be a very lightly stocked situation. So you could have overgrazing happening with one horse in a 1,000-acre pasture, right? That horse is going to graze those most tender, best tasting plants, and then a few weeks later, if those plants are growing, it's going to come back and regraze those same plants, right? And it's not going to graze the less desirable, which are now probably the ranker and taller plants in that pasture. So those plants are being overgrazed. So, you know, overgrazing happens on a plant-by-plant basis. So if we can stop the overgrazing and then we can start allowing those plants full opportunity to recover in between grazings, we can do a lot for pasture health, which will then correlate to increased carrying capacity, allowing us to run more animals and hopefully have a better economic impact on our total business.
Sure. Limit their selection, or limit the amount of area they have to choose from so that they graze off everything kind of evenly. And then maybe later even you could come back to that after some regrowth if we're talking about a growing season type of a grazing situation.
You got it.
So I guess that leaves one pillar. That would be the production side of it. What are we typically looking at as far as some things that we can do on the production side to improve? I think you said typically in a ranching industry or a ranching operation, this is the bread and butter. This is what they love. This is why they're in the industry. And some of the other things they do, they tolerate it because they have to. What are some of the things that we can do what we love to do even better?
Sure. Yeah. So your podcast is about challenging paradigms. And I think one of the biggest paradigms we can challenge in the production pillar is the idea that productivity is correlated with profitability. And just because I'm a productive ranch, that I should be a profitable ranch. And it doesn't work that way at all. You know, we look at a lot of ranches that are extremely productive, that wean really big calves and have great performance numbers, and they're absolutely losing their shirt in terms of profitability. So I think when we look at the production side of the ranch, we have to quit talking about weaning weights. We have to quit talking about, you know, raising big fancy calves, and we need to start looking at What are my profitability numbers? What are my targets on that? So when we dissect a ranch in terms of profitability, on the production side, we find the biggest thing that gives us a lever is getting out of the feeding business. Okay, anytime we can avoid putting equipment between a cow and what she consumes, we're generally going to improve the profitability of that operation. So the more we can feed a cow with grazing, and the less we can feed a cow with having to be fed out of a machine, the better we're going to be. So looking at how do I structure the business so, you know, what used to take me 2 tons of hay to get a cow through the wintertime, how can I do that with a quarter ton or even no hay? You know, are there ways to do that? And so that brings us to the conversation of matching the production schedule with the environment and with the seasons. You know, if we're asking a cow to calve in January and February, I don't see many ways to get out of the feeding business. Okay? We're going to be kind of locked into a 2 ton, maybe even 3 to 4 ton per cow feeding business. So, but if we shift that production schedule towards a more spring or summer calving season, and it all depends on the resources you have. I mean, there's not a prescription for a profitable ranch. I don't want to be sitting here saying everybody should calve in May and June because everybody shouldn't. But we have to look at the resources we have and what's the way I can do it most cost effectively to give me my biggest return at the end of the year.
Yeah, and I think that is this is what we love. This is why we're in the industry, because we love to manage herds. And what I think that I'm taking away from our discussion, just given on the based on the sheer amount of time that we spent on the different pillars today, is that if you don't get the people part of it right, and you don't get the economics part of it right, you aren't going to get to manage the forage. You aren't going to get to manage the herd, because they're going to be taken away from you by circumstances that are beyond your control. Have you seen that ring true?
I have, yeah. So there's some outstanding cattlemen that do a really good job raising quality beef. But the whole thing's coming crashing down around them because they're losing money doing it, and the people around them don't enjoy being around them. I mean, who wants to work for a business that's in economic distress, right? And so you're going to move on to something else, and the guy that's raising these big fancy calves or whatever they're doing that they love is going to be doing it by himself for a little while, and then pretty much out of business in a while because he never got the economics right. So they are all interrelated, and to be able to do what we love, like you said, raising cattle and doing those things, we have to get these other parts right. And they really become a lot of fun as you learn to do them. I mean, sometimes ranchers think, oh, God, I didn't go into ranching because I like to run numbers or I like to talk about emotions with other people in the business, right? But I think if you figure out how to do those things well, you start to enjoy them and they become part of the fun of ranching as well.
And I think that maybe one of the keys to starting to enjoy them is finding somebody around you who does enjoy those numbers and can help you see them in a way that clicks with you and makes you understand the benefit of understanding those numbers.
You got it. Absolutely.
Anything else you want to leave with us today? How can people catch up with you, see what you're doing, or how could they maybe get in on learning some of these things, some resources or some classes, some different things coming up that they would have an opportunity to jump in on?
Sure, yeah, you're opening the door for me to give a commercial. I'll take the opportunity. So the two things that I'm involved with are the High Plains Ranch Practicum School. That's what Clay's been going through, and it's been a lot of fun having him in the class. We've got an exceptional bunch of students this year. We usually do that once a year. Our class starts in June. We usually recruit in May. Go on, type in High Plains Ranch Practicum in Google, and you'll find our website with our dates and where we're going to be doing that. The other thing that I'm involved with, which is another exceptional bunch of ranchers. I mean, one of the things is surrounding yourself with people that are challenging your paradigms and thinking and pushing you forward. So I think in agriculture, it's so easy to get caught in the circle of the neighbors, right? And the pessimistic and the coffee shop talk and all that stuff. And you have to break out of that. And by listening to the podcast, you're obviously a person that's looking to broaden your horizons. So, part of that is finding groups that are broadening your horizons and peer groups that are doing that. And another one of those is the Ranching for Profit School. Type in Ranching for Profit in Google. You'll find out all their information. There's a free newsletter that comes out twice a week with articles that are challenging your paradigms, written by Dave Pratt. Dave, I think, is the best in the business at teaching ranchers profit-minded business management skills, and really does a great job doing that. And the Ranching for Profit schools are taught all over the country. We do about 6 or 8 a year, mostly west of the Mississippi, but we do go east sometimes. And if you want to have a week-long experience that will change the way you see your business, you need to look at coming to the Ranching for Profit school. It is a significant investment, but it's not significant when you look at the big picture. I mean, if you're in the ranching business, you're probably managing multi-million dollars worth of assets and inventory. And what would any multi-million dollar business look to invest in their key management people on an annual basis a year? So most of these businesses are putting in at least a month's worth of salary a year in their key management positions. In ranching, if we have to pay $20 to go to an extension program in the afternoon, we get cheesed off, right? Okay. We need to change that paradigm, guys. It's time to invest in ourselves, put some money towards our professional improvement, find those things that are going to move our business to the next level, invest our money and invest our time to make significant changes in our business. And that's what I'm here to do, is help people do that. If our programs can help you do that, I'd love to have you come. If I can help you find something else that will move you in the right direction that's not the things we're doing, I'd love to do that. The way we learn is by interacting with other people that are doing neat stuff and challenging the envelope and pushing it. So we'd love to help you move your business in the next direction.
Yeah, and I think that on top of the challenging of your paradigm that comes with being a part of something like the High Plains Ranch Practicum or Ranching for Profit or any of the other schools that are out there, the networking is invaluable as well, and just some of the relationships that you get to build with those people, and hearing about what they're doing on their operation and the successes they're having, and even some of the failures. You know, being able to learn from somebody else's mistake can save you a lot of money. So that's
exactly cool.
Yeah. Well, I thank you so much for joining me today. Links to all of the stuff that Dallas just talked about will be on the website at workingcows.net/2, workingcows.net/2, and you can check out those things there and get yourself involved in maybe expanding your horizons or challenging your paradigms, as it were. So thanks, Dallas.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Clay. I appreciate the opportunity to be on here. And thanks for doing this. Man, what a need. And your podcast is going in my podcast aggregator as soon as it can, and I'm going to be a constant listener.
All right, thank you. Appreciate that. Well, we say that we're all about providing producers a platform to share paradigm-challenging practices here on the Working Cows podcast. I'm sure Dallas Mount did that for you here today. If he did, I would encourage you to check out some of the resources that are going to be available at workingcows.net/2. Check out Dave Pratt's biweekly newsletter. Maybe look into attending a school like the High Plains Ranch Practicum or the Ranching for Profit. Pick up Dave's book, Healthy Land, Happy Families, and Profitable Businesses. It's full of short, readable snippets, basically newsletter-sized chapters on different topics, all of the topics that we discussed today, all four of the areas that we discussed today. So check that out if you're interested, and we'll see you next week.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.